Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Texts 10 and 11. Yasya raste praja sarvas.
Yasya dipi praja sarvas.
Tasyante sad vasadubhi.
Trasyante sad yasadubhi.
Tasya matasya nasyanti.
Tasya matasya nasyanti.
Kirtir ayur bhago gati.
Kirtir ayur bhago gati.
Esura gyam paro dharmo.
Esura gyam paro dharmo.
Hriyartanam arti nigraha.
Hriyartanam arti nigraha.
Ata enam vadhisyami.
Ata enam vadhisyami.
Bhuta druham asat. Tamam.
Bhuta druham asattamam.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O chaste one, the king's good name, duration of life, and good rebirth vanish when all kinds of living entities are terrified by miscreants in his kingdom. It is certainly the prime duty of the king to subdue first the sufferings of those who suffer. Therefore, I must kill this most wretched man because he is violent against other living beings. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When there is some disturbance caused by wild animals in a village or town, the police or others take action to kill them. Similarly, it is the duty of the government to kill at once all bad social elements such as thieves, dacoits, and murderers. The same punishment is also due to animal killers because the animals of the state are also praja. Praja means one who has taken birth in the state, and this includes both men and animals. Any living being who takes birth in the state has the primary right to live under the protection of the king. The jungle animals are also subject to the king. They also have a right to live. So what to speak of domestic animals like the cows and bulls? Any living being, if he terrifies other living beings, is a most wretched subject, and the king should at once kill such a disturbing element, as the wild animal is killed when it creates disturbances. Similarly, any man who unnecessarily kills or terrifies the jungle animals or other animals must be punished at once. By the law of the Supreme Lord, all living beings, in whatever shape they may be, are the sons of the Lord, and no one has the right to kill another animal unless it is so ordered by the codes of natural law. The tiger can kill a lower animal for his subsistence, but a man cannot kill an animal for his subsistence. That is the law of God, who has created the law that a living being subsists by eating another living being. Thus, the vegetarians are also living by eating other living beings. Therefore, the law is that one should live only by eating specific living beings as ordained by the law of God. The Ishopanishad directs that one should live by the direction of the Lord and not at one's sweet will. A man can subsist on varieties of grains, fruits, and milk ordained by God, and there is no need of animal food, save and except in particular cases. The illusion king or executive head, even though sometimes advertised as a great philosopher and learned scholar, will allow slaughterhouses in the state without knowing that torturing poor animals clears the way to hell for such foolish kings or executive heads. The executive head must always be alert to the safety of the prajas, meaning those who are take birth in his kingdom, both man and animal, and inquire whether a particular living being is harassed at any place by another living being. The harassing living being must at once be caught and put to death, as shown by Maharaj Pariksit. the people's government or government by the people should not allow killing of innocent animals by the sweet will of foolish government men. They must know the codes of God as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Maharaj Parikshit quotes here that according to the codes of God, the irresponsible king or state executive jeopardizes his good name, duration of life, power, and strength, and ultimately his progressive march towards a better life and salvation after death. Such foolish men do not even believe in the existence of a next life. While commenting on this particular verse, we have in our presence the statement of a great modern politician who has recently died and left his will, which discloses his poor fund of knowledge of the codes of God mentioned by Maharaj Parikshit. The politician was so ignorant of the codes of God that he writes, "I do not believe in any such ceremonies, and to submit to them, even as a matter of form, would be hypocrisy and an attempt to delude ourselves and others. I have no religious sentiment in the matter." You know who that is? I'm not absolutely sure, but I'm almost sure it's Nehru. He would say something stupid like that. Yeah. Contrasting these statements of a great politician in the modern age with those of Maharaj Parikshit, we find a vast difference. Maharaj Parikshit was pious according to the scriptural codes, whereas the modern politician goes by his personal belief and sentiments. Any great man of the material world is, after all, a conditioned soul. He is bound by his hands and feet by the ropes of material nature, and still the foolish conditioned soul thinks of himself as free to act by his whimsical sentiments. The conclusion is that people in the time of Maharaj Parikshit were happy and the animals were given proper protection because the executive head was not whimsical or ignorant of God's law. Foolish, faithless creatures try to avoid the existence of the Lord and proclaim themselves secular at the cost of valuable human life. The human life is especially meant for knowing the science of God, but foolish creatures, especially in the age of Kali, instead of knowing God scientifically, make propaganda against religious beliefs as well as the existence of God, even though they are always bound by the laws of God, by the symptoms of birth, death, old age, and disease. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There are many great points in this purport by Srila Prabhupada. But one thing that I wanted to talk about today is this point. He is bound by his hands and feet, by the ropes of material nature, and still the foolish conditioned soul thinks of himself as free to act by his whimsical sentiments. That's a very important statement by Prabhupada. And what does it mean exactly? Well, Krishna explains this in depth in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunaya Karmani Sarvasaha Ahankaravi Bhudatva Kataham Iti Manyate. He says, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Now, most people would not agree with this verse. So, what do you mean? I'm the one that's deciding. Oh, you are? Do you remember deciding to be born? Do you decide when you're going to pass stool and urine? Well, someone might say, yeah, of course I decide. But no, usually one is forced to do it. I knew this one person who was trying to become a devotee. He and his wife were nice people, but very opinionated. So this was in Berkeley, California. So they stayed in the parking lot in a VW VW bus. Huh? Camper, okay. And they did not, they claimed they did not pass stool or urine. they claim that. Because they were very careful in what they ate. Very, very careful. You know, they would basically just soak some grains and eat them. They wouldn't even cook them. They were very fanatical like that. So that's okay, because they were nice people. They liked to do their service. And so as time went on, his wife became pregnant. So one day I talked to him. I said, Prabhu, are you going to take your wife to a doctor for some checkup? No, no, what do you mean? We don't need the doctor. Okay, you know, I'm sorry I asked. So, and she was a very nice lady, wonderful lady. So it came time for the delivery. And he was going to do it himself in the VW bus or the VW trailer. Anyway, at one point, they realized that there's some serious problem. So he panicked, and he called some of the women. The women came. They panicked. So we had to call the ambulance. The ambulance comes, puts her on a stretcher, takes her to a hospital. And fortunately, the baby didn't die, and she didn't die. So the baby was born. So now they have a baby who definitely passed a stool. And it's in the little VW. So after some time, I mean, the wife finally put her foot down. She said, look, we can't live like this anymore. Were they passing stool on urine? They probably were, with very, very little, because they were planning their intake to be minimal. Right. Now, have you ever heard a story like this before? This, you cannot make it up. Reality is stranger than fiction. You can't make these things up. So finally, he decides, I have to get some apartment, right? Now, he never worked before. He never, by the way, he was African. A really nice guy. And his wife was a white American lady. And she was very nice, too. They're actually nice, nice people. But he finally got a job. And he used to put a suit on and go to the job. And he got an apartment. And he got a car. And all of a sudden, he became a normal guy. And, of course, they didn't completely give up Krishna consciousness, but they were no more, you know, in Mangalarti every day and chanting their rounds and things like that. So what's interesting about that is we're not really in control. That's why I'm telling the story. We are not in control. We're being forced to do everything. You know, waking up in the morning, we're forced to wake up. Going to sleep at night, we're forced to sleep. Going to the bathroom, we're forced to do it. Eating, we're forced to do it. All these things are being forced on us. Being born, getting old, getting sick, dying. We're forced. No one's choosing to do these things. But yet, they're crazy enough to claim that they are independent. And the craziest people are philosophers, especially the modern existential philosophers like Jean-Paul Sartre, the crazy French guy. He wrote a book saying, oh, we're all independent. You know, we have to be heroic in the face of nature. You know, writing big words like that. Mm-hmm. But all nonsense people. I actually met him once. You know, I didn't actually talk to him, but I would see him at this cafe in Montparnasse. It's a neighborhood in Paris. We used to do Sankirtan there.
Fourteen arrondissements.
Yeah. So, Prabhupada says, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. the materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience or ignorance. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of God is known as Hrishikesha, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So here it's focusing on the false ego. And this is a major theme in Bhagavad Gita also, where it says, 13th chapter, Nirmana Moha. Is that the 13th chapter? No, it's not the 13th chapter. Oh, yeah, it's the 15th chapter, right. Nirmana Moha. Verse number 5. Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosa Adiatma Nitya Vinivritta Kama Dwandera Vimukta Sukaduka Samgyar Gajanti Amuda Padam Aveyam Tat. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to the eternal kingdom. So Prabhupada says, the surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature, it is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not lord of the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion, for although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, the earth, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is freed from such a false notion, he becomes free from all the false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. And after this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions, such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full in knowledge, then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is it that we actually own, or that we can call our property? Actually, it's Krishna. We can own Krishna. That's the only thing we can actually own. We don't own the body. We don't own material nature. We don't own the house, the car. It looks like we own it, but no, all these things are going to be taken away. There's only one thing that cannot be taken away from us. What is that? It's Krishna. We have an eternal relationship with him. See? But when we say we own Krishna, we actually mean that we belong to Krishna. But because we belong to Krishna, we cannot be separated from him at any time. That's the only thing we have that's real. Everything else is false because it's going to come and go, okay? Including this body. In fact, as we discussed yesterday, you change the body every second. Every second we're producing 3 million blood corpuscles. And in 24 hours it becomes 200 billion. Right? So you're actually changing the body every day and every second. So we have to understand, what is it that we actually own? Because if we say, I own this car, this house, this 401k, or this wife, or this husband, or these children, and so forth, we get entangled. Just like this African friend of mine, he thought he owned his body, and he could control it completely. But nature took over at a certain point, and he got trapped just like anybody else, right? So we cannot persistently be a controller. We're all going, because our natural position is to be controlled by Krishna and to be subordinate to Krishna. Until we realize that point, we suffer and we create difficult situations. Like this man's wife almost died because he was a fanatic. So this false ego, this idea that I am the owner, I am the controller, I'm independent, is defeated in the Bhagavad Gita. So the first verse I read is from 3rd chapter, 27th verse. The second verse I'm going to read is 5th chapter, 8th and 9th verse. It says, a person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all, because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Now, how many people would accept this? Very few people. Prabhupada says, a person in Krishna consciousness is pure in his existence and consequently has nothing to do with any work which depends upon five immediate and remote causes. The doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune. So I'm going to stop right there, and we'll start tomorrow from this point, because this is getting into a lot of philosophy. The five factors of every action. A very important point to understand. So we'll stop right there. Are there any questions?
How is it in the spiritual world? Like, there also to be Lord or something? Like once.
You have to speak in a mic.
So what is the... So once the spirit soul goes to in the spiritual world in Goloka, so there also do we lord over something, or what is the reason why we come down? Is there false ego also causing problems there?
Well, we came down. But once you go back, you don't come down again. Just like, let's say somebody calls you up and says, Mr. So-and-so, you just won a free vacation for two to Mazatlan, Mexico. Do you want to receive the airline tickets by snail mail, or you want to pick it up at the, or you want to get email, or do you want to get pick it up at the airport? And you say, I'll pick it up at the airport. They say, okay, this is the date, this is the flight number, etc. So you and your wife are ecstatic, right? And you get all ready, you go to the airport, you have all your luggage with you, and the kids and everything. And you get there, and you wait in the counter, it's a busy day, your turn comes, and they say, yes, how can we help you? And say, I have a flight, this is the flight, this is my number, this is my name. and they look at it, and they, you know, because you had it written down, and they look and say, "You're not on this flight." I said, "What? What do you mean I'm not? I want this." They said, "No, you're not on the flight." And you're like bewildered, right? Also, you, when they told you to, you have a free ticket, they also ask for your social security number, just, you know, for identification. And you find out that you're $5,000 less in your bank. So you call up the number, and they tell you that this number has been canceled. And all of a sudden, you know, you break into a cold sweat. Your wife is looking at you. The kids are really upset. And you realize that you were cheated. So the next time you get a phone call, they say, "Mr. So-and-so, you have just won a free ticket to Cancun, Mexico. How would you like to receive the ticket? Snail mail or email, or would you like to pick it up at the airport?" What would you say?
I'll slam the phone.
Exactly. So that's the point. Once you go through millions and millions of births and deaths in the material world, and then go through a whole process of becoming Krishna conscious and everything, and you go back to the spiritual world, believe me, you'll never fall down again. After going through all that misery, you never would fall down again. So now the question is, why did you fall down? Because you have limited free will. Why sometimes you don't come to Mangalarti? You tell me.
Yeah, because it's like I'm too lazy to wake up.
Exactly, right? You have free will, right? Yeah. We can't force you, yeah. Right? Even if your wife says, "Get up, go," you know, say, "No, I'm tired today, I'm not going." So you say we have free will, and you can exercise it at all times. It's just like you thought you had won the free ticket, right? Then you found out the whole thing was a crock, as they say in English, right? It's all hoax. So you would never make that mistake again. You might make another mistake, because the thieves, they always think up new ways of cheating people. Yeah. See? But that way, you'll never get cheated again.
After that mistake, it will no longer be my free will. It will be my wife's free will.
Yeah, she won't believe you anymore. She'll always remind you of this major mistake you made. Okay, so, yeah, well, we make a mistake. We become attracted by the glitter of the material nature and the promise for independent sense gratification. Just like you want to be Krishna conscious. Like this is another true story. There was a person who was initiated, who was a good devotee, and his guru was very strict with him, and he was very strict in his following. But his guru also told him that, you know, "I'm building a temple, so I need to get money, so you're a grihastha, you should try and make some money and send it to me." So now he's concerned about making money, right? Because his guru said, you know, "If you can, do this." So he was thinking in different ways how to make money, and because he didn't have much experience, he decided to sell Amway. You know what Amway is, right? Multi-level marketing. So then he started pestering everyone in the temple to be his downline in Amway, because he heard, you know, the check will come in every month. All the checks will come in, and you'll be a millionaire, right? And he became obsessed with it. And one thing led to another. He tried to convince me to, because every Sunday people were coming to the temple, to convince the people coming to the temple who, he said, "Well, everyone follows what you say. So if you, and all these Indians are coming, they're all working at Microsoft. So, you know, you can make a lot of money and build a new temple." And I said, "Are you crazy?" I said, "Is that why we're having Sunday feasts and going through all this trouble and going out of Sankirtan and doing festivals in order to have a downline? In order to convince the people coming to the temple to buy Amway products?" I said, "You're crazy. I'm not going to do that." So, you see how people become, I mean, he was a devotee. He was a good devotee, but he became bewildered. And those are all personal choices. We have limited free will. When I tried to convince him to stop this, you know, just get a job, just get a go work in Safeway, you know, you can make money and send the money, you know, and he didn't want to do it. He was bewildered by Amway. So that's what happens. It can happen to anybody at any time. For one person, it's Amway. For another person, it's a new partner. Another person, it's a car. You know, whatever it is, they get attracted to it and they forget everything else. Yeah.
Why this happened? Like in your example.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So Maharaj, why this happens? Like in your this example, that person is very good devotee and then he got bewildered. So just by one instruction that send money, that bewildered him, or like what? Like he's doing sadhana and he's strict and suddenly he's on the wrong path and.
Well, I mean, his guru asked him if he could, you know, make some extra money to send it to him. So he thought, okay, this is my duty, right? But he didn't ask any advice from anyone who's got more experience than him as far as making money, you know? And he thought, oh, this is ideal, Amway. You know, I just convince everybody to become my downline and I'll get the check every month. They're going to work their butts off and I'm going to get the money and I'm going to send it. It doesn't work like that. The whole idea of multi-level marketing is cheating. And the only people that actually you can convince are your family members or people in your congregation. You know, you go out on the street, you're not going to convince hardly anyone.
Yes.
So it's all cheating. See, and people get bewildered by it.
When I was in college, my friends, they tried to convince and they took me to the session as well. There.
See, in India, there's so much cheating
and,
in that way.
And with Krishna's grace, I didn't like that and I dropped the idea.
Hari Bol.
I have a question. So, sorry, Maharaj, I have a question. You mentioned that actually we don't own anything, right? And that's true, that we don't own anything.
No, I said you own one thing.
I'm coming to that. We are saying that we don't own anything. And I think, I totally agree on that. Like we don't own anything. Everything is by Krishna's mercy. So you said that Krishna, you own the Krishna, right? But at times, right, you may not own Krishna, right? Because Maya takes away Krishna from you. So how Krishna?
Let me say it differently. You're never separated from Krishna. Okay, so when you own something, you have possession of it, right? But let me say it in a different way. You're never separated from Krishna. Krishna is in your heart. Krishna is in every cell of your body. Krishna is in every atom, right? And Krishna is within you and he's without also. You can never be separated from Krishna. Let's put it like that. Let's not say you own Krishna. But you can never be separated. It's the only thing that you can never lose is your relationship with Krishna. You might, just like when you go to sleep, you might forget things. But when you wake up, you remember. Right? So we're in a sleeping condition right now, you know, dreaming all kinds of fantasies. But when we wake up and become very sober in Krishna consciousness, we suddenly realize, wait a minute, you know, no one can take Krishna away from me. And Krishna's always been with me. It's just I was just unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But everything else, your car, your house, your family, your, you know, whatever you think you own, you don't really own it.
Yeah.
It's going to be taken away from you at one point.
So is it correct to say that since you, if you are the body which is temporary, you cannot own anything that is temporary. But if you, your soul, which is eternal, then you can be a part of something which is eternal. Which is
it's not that you can be. You are part and parcel of Krishna. You can't change that. It's not that you become something. It's something that you are by nature. Naturally, you're part and parcel of Krishna. You can only forget it. But that doesn't change it. Just like sometimes, you know, I think I've lost a $20 bill or lost some money, right? Actually, what I did was I forgot it was in a pocket of a pants, and I put the pants in the washer, right? But, you know, sometimes it takes time to realize, you know, that actually it's in the pocket, right? So for maybe 4 or 5 days, I'm thinking I lost this money. You know, I'm in anxiety. How did it happen? Right? But then, you know, when I put this pants on, I put my hand in the pocket. Oh, there it is, right? So I realized the whole I was an illusion. So that's happening to us all the time. You know? But the money is there. And just like Krishna is there, you can never be separated from Krishna. That's the only thing that can never be changed. So that's real. Everything else, it's not real. When I say it's not real, yes, there are cars, there are houses, there are family members. All those things are there, yes. But you have to understand that this is not a permanent thing. You could be separated. But Krishna, you can never be separated from. Yeah.
I think I read somewhere, Maharaj, where Prabhupada, everything can be taken away from us, but the only the thing that cannot be taken away from us is our right to surrender to Krishna.
Yes.
That's right. It can be never be taken away.
But only in the human form.
Sure, of course. Philosophy, probably. Yeah.
No, animals don't have free will. Only human beings, human form has free will. Limited free will. It's not complete free will. It's limited free will.
What is unlimited free will?
That means you're God.
God. Yeah. Indirectly you're God.
Yeah. We're not God. It's limited free will. And our free will is only two things. Either you surrender to Krishna or you don't surrender to Krishna. And either way, Krishna will know what's going to happen to you. Yeah. Haribol. All glories to Prabhupada. It's a big subject.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.